Welcome to Design Your Life and Business, the podcast for leaders by Bright Mind Consulting Group. We give you the necessary tools to help you become the architect of not just your business, but your life too. I'm your host, Javon Wooden. What is going on today, Kevin? Sounds like I know you have a lot. We talked a little bit before the show, so let's talk about this, man. How you doing?
Sleep deprived. Busy with work, trying to finish a home remodel all at the same time. And I don't know. I love all the chaos. The chaos keeps me energized.
You flourish. And for the designers listening, Kevin just had a new baby girl at the time of recording. So that's three. You hit the hat trick.
I did. All my friends that have gone this route, they say, now you're on zone defense. So good luck, man.
There you go, man. So, well, we're going to have a lot of fun, man. We're going to wake you up because I know you're sleep deprived. So we're going to start off with a question I love to ask every guest. Who are you? Who is Kevin Stoffman?
Oh, man. I'll give you the year was 1981. No, I'm head of innovation at a software company. I'm a mediocre golfer, recovering triathlete, and now dad of three girls. Born and raised in Dallas, still here. I'm on the road an absolute ton, but excited to chat a bunch of different things. But at the end of the day, I'm basically a software executive at heart.
Absolutely, man. And can you tell us or share a little bit of your journey towards becoming one of the leading commercial real estate tech execs in the industry?
Sure. I've been in and around the industry for almost 20 years. I started in Morgan Stanley, which just was an analyst tour of duty that a lot of people do out of undergrad. Spent a few years there, then got an MBA. Then that was the financial crisis. So for anyone who was trying to find jobs in 2009, 2010 in financial services, really hard to do. So I pivoted. I went into consulting and I thought I was going to do it for a year. And 1 year became 9 years at various firms. And that my last role there was at Deloitte. And I was in charge of evaluating what was next in real estate technology across the US. So I met with a bunch of interesting, fast growing software companies that were trying to help real estate owners, operators, managers make more money and do it in a way that was going to benefit their community wherever they were living, working, and playing. And I met 200 or so different companies. One of them I happened to fall in love with so much, I left consulting and joined the startup world. So I became their COO, spent a little over 3 years there, grew us from 10 to 50 employees, raised a couple rounds of capital, expanded us into Europe. And then it's crazy how time flies. Just last year, became head of innovation at the company I'm at now, which is called Cherry.
Wow, that's a lot, man. Tell us what some of the snags you ran into running an organization that quickly, just expanding at that level.
When you're at a large organization, you often take for granted the support system that is in place. Some of us would likely call it unneeded bureaucracy when we're trying to sell things, but any other time we're calling it help. A marketing team, a legal team, folks in PR and operations and financial reporting and investor relations and all of those things that when you need something done, there's people there to do that for you. When you become an entrepreneur, you get to be all those things plus the janitor also at the same time. And that for me was initially a culture shock. I went from basically 100,000 employees to 10 employees. And there was no process in place, so I had to create it. And it wasn't just me, right? It was nine other super, super passionate, hardworking, optimistic, and hopeful people that wanted to build a company. So we were all working long hours and learning as we went. And it's very, very cliche, but a lot of people say we were building the plane as we flew it, but that's extremely accurate. You do so many things wrong and that's where you learn. When you do things right and you get new clients and referrals and testimonials, you don't really learn that much. You just think that what you're doing is perfect. But when you do things wrong and you get feedback, that's how you get better.
100%, man. The real lessons is in the losses, as they say. But what inspired that shift for you to say, you know what? Yeah, I have all these skills. Let me shift over from this finance to this real estate. And I just want to pursue prop tech forever. What sparked that?
I asked people that I trusted. Doesn't matter what industry you're in. There's likely a few people that have been doing it a bit longer and are more successful than you in that same industry that you look up to. At least I hope for all of you listening, you exist in an ecosystem where there are people that are your mentors or even your former competitors or partners or investors, just people you've in and around with that you trust their opinion. I went and I sought their feedback. So I was in, I would say, pretty comfortable role at Deloitte. And I asked some clients, some partners, some investors, if you were me, what would you do? And it's crazy. I mean, there were only seven people. So this is a small sample size, but literally all seven of them said, what do you have to lose? Like you go, you do this thing, take a chance. Let's just say it doesn't work out. Find product market fit. You can't raise capital. You crash and burn. And you spend the year doing that. What's the worst thing that happened? You were an executive for a year. You learned a bunch of lessons. You turn, go right back into consulting, probably at the same level you were before. So you lost 1 year in your trajectory, but with a bunch of great stories that you can tell. And well, if that's the worst case scenario, but the best case scenario is you thrive and the company grows, and there's a liquidity event, and then you build a new reputation and trajectory on that, seems like a no-brainer. And it's definitely not for everybody. When you lose the support network, you really lose the support network. And it's high stress. It's not for people who want to be in a fairly comfortable, steady career. You know, being an entrepreneur is not that way. But I'll never go back.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm a former Deloitter myself.
Nice.
Yeah. One of the things you learn, though, from the consulting space is kind of that entrepreneurial mindset, too, because you're winning clients. You have to win contracts within the organization, you know, so you kind of get that sense of networking and how important that really is. So, yeah, I love that you asked and they were all like, yeah, go for it. Why not? Because we all know boomerangs, right? People leave and come back all the time. So that was great advice.
Yeah, there's one thing that I really, really saw firsthand, not only at Deloitte, but when I started out of B school at Ernst & Young. It's a really small world. People jump firms all the time. They go from someone who was a client to someone who's a competitor or vice versa. They go from someone who was a partner to someone who's an investor. And everyone talks, everyone compares notes, and your former colleagues become potential friends or partners or clients or investors too. And the dealing with different incentive systems and politics, both internal and external, how to manage all those relationships. Consulting is just fantastic at that. And I don't know I fully gave it enough credit as a career line until I left it and realized everything I had learned about what you need to worry about when you're putting together contracts, when you're setting the guardrails and scope of doing some sort of implementation, or when you're partnering with someone, what risks are there reputationally, politically, and technically?
Absolutely. Yeah, you learn a ton. And like you said, you don't realize until you're implementing it. I know I did that same thing, not just with Deloitte, but the MBA. You know, I was like, man, this really is pointless. But then as I started building my own business, I'm like, oh, this is what they talked about, customer journey and negotiations and establishing partnerships and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm with you, man. Those aha moments definitely come on the journey. So
I remember we had this class and it was all about the ICP. You had to come up with your ideal customer profile. And I was like, what sort of hooey is this? This is marketing fluff, man. No way. And I get to the startup after Deloitte and we were trying to grow fast. So any potential customer, no matter how complicated it was, if it was revenue, like, sounds great. Let's do it. And so quickly you get absolutely buried because you're just worried about making that number go up and to the right. And it's not until you get a little perspective and you develop whoever your ideal customer is going to be and how big is that universe and who looks exactly like them. And is that a big enough market to focus on for the next 3, 6, 9 months? That makes life a lot easier to manage.
Absolutely. And it, you know, you get targeted, you get pointed on the marketing. You're not wasting time and resources just talking to everyone. So it definitely plays a point. And it's even more so when you don't have unlimited money, like the big, big companies, right? You have to really be wise and be intentional about where you're putting that time and effort. So that's a great point.
Even if you're not at a large company, I don't know what it was like in your world, but a year and a half ago, maybe even as recent as a year ago, when interest rates were still super low, mm-hmm. and tech valuations were through the roof. Like, there was money everywhere, right? If you had decent growth, you could write your own ticket. You could command any particular valuation, and people were spending all sorts of money. You're going to conferences, getting massive booths, going out to fancy dinners. People were like, let's go out to the club. Okay, sure. Why not? Like, we have this venture capital money. Let's just entertain whatever it takes to build a relationship. And then 2023 hit and everything changed course really fast. And you have to do twice as much with the same amount of people. And you have to, you know, in some cases, I have a lot of friends that either have been laid off or companies have conducted layoffs. And I was surprised because I thought at least externally those companies were doing well. You came back to reality really fast. But that's when you become a lot better.
That's so true. And a lot of people listening and, you know, who have been through that understand that as an organization, you want to foresee things. You want to forecast. So it's like you may be doing well, but you want to make sure that you stay doing well versus going there. So you kind of stabilize the operation, so to speak. So you're only focusing on the absolute must-dos, right? Instead of doing all that R&D and all that other stuff. So it's really, like you said, you need the bureaucracy, unfortunately, if you want to be sustainable. But it hurts. You know, it's a tough thing as an organization to say, oh, we got to cut this. People, we love them, but we can't keep them because we can't do that operation anymore. So yeah, you learn a lot through all these peaks and troughs for sure.
I was getting with a good friend who's the CEO of another prop tech company in the industry, and they let go of about 15 people from their company. I don't know exactly how big they are, but it was like a not insignificant amount of people. Like if, let's just say they have a couple hundred people, it was, you know, 5-6% of the workforce. And you know, I asked him how it felt. And he said, look, we had an all hands and I told the company, this isn't like we let go of bad performing people. We had to make some tough calls and I want you to be public about helping them. Like if they want a recommendation and they were good to you, you would give them a recommendation. You help them find new jobs. These are people that they could end up going somewhere where they become a client and we want them to be friends with us. And who knows, maybe they come back 2 years from now with new skills. And this is a small industry, so we all want to be good to one another. But let this also be a sign that these were good people and we still let them go because we weren't hitting all the metrics we had to hit. And in order to be profitable and to be able to raise capital there and be a sustainable growing business, we had to make tough choices and just know that we don't do this. We don't take this lightly.
And that's a great point to make, Kevin. It's not like there's a bunch of people just ready to cross names out like, yeah, let's get rid of this person, this person. It is a very hard thing because people are on both ends. And we all say the people, processes, technology, people is number one. So you don't want to cut the people. And you understand that some people who are getting laid off, you know, I was a part of a layoff. Some people who get laid off, they are at companies for years. They devote their life to these organizations. So yeah, you can't take it lightly, but it is a ebb and flow. So any designers listening who aren't running your own organizations and maybe you're in those other positions, don't take it as like this is a call to just exit and do whatever, but take it as a call to ensure that you're putting yourself in the best position where if that does happen, you have that resume up to date, you're making sure you're investing in your development professionally and personally, and you're making sure that you're establishing those connections. So if it does happen, you can say, hey, Kevin, hey, Javon, hey, I just got laid off, man. You got anything for me? Or you can reach out in that way.
Love it.
Absolutely. So there's a word, right, that I'm going to ask you. Do you consider yourself an intrapreneur? You know, someone who joins a company at early stages and you bring like a valuable, unique skill set to help it grow and scale?
So this is a bit of a softball for me because my title is Global Head of Innovation.
Yeah.
at Cherry. So yes, absolutely. Part of my job is take what we're already good at and make it even better, right? How can we add features to our platform? How can we partner with new and exciting entities, groups of people, other software companies? And that's across regions geographically, that's across life cycle stages of the real estate life cycle, and that's across property types. So I'm trying to keep my finger on the pulse of the entire ecosystem. Where are we not that we need to be tomorrow? While also at the same time focusing on what's going to help us scale. It really is a tightrope to walk. Luckily, I work at a company where it's not just that new ideas are welcome, they are required is too strong of a word, but the executives reach out when we do these like hackathons or ideation sessions or quarterly OKR reviews. if people are consistently quiet, the executives are reaching out to them privately and saying, hey, what's going on? Like, it doesn't matter whether you are the CEO or a summer intern at our company, you're at this company and you pass through a very, very rigorous amount of interviews and culture fits and tests and social gatherings and all that stuff. We do a lot before the offer comes out. But once it does, you're over the moat. You are part of the company. So we expect you to be speaking out and speaking loudly. No one's going to be penalized for a quote unquote bad idea, because it's just an idea that will help debate. And so part of my job is corralling a lot of those ideas and then trying to present them formally to the board.
Absolutely. Well, you have a ton of skills to help with that: business strategy, tech and digital strategy, data analytics, innovation management, name it, Kevin has it. So how has that contributed to your ability to help organizations grow exponentially?
Well, part of it is, I think when you're early on in your career, you build some sort of specialization, a skill set. Maybe you're really good at sales, you're really good at marketing, you're a strong engineer. And for a while, you might not work with those other departments. But eventually you get to a level where that's not only encouraged, but it's required. So I don't know how to code. I look at SQL queries and they're kind of gibberish. And then I look at actual Python code and I think it's Mandarin. So I have no background in that.
Right.
But I spend a lot of time with our engineering team because I need to understand if we're going to go make promises to potential clients or current clients that want new stuff. I need to know what we are allowed to say to them, what we're allowed to promise to them, what we say we can deliver today versus next quarter versus next year versus that's just not for us. Let me just recommend a partner. Mm-hmm. And you really can't deliver that messaging, I think, with confidence outside the company without knowing the capabilities inside the company. So if my career up to this point has taught me anything, it's really, really get to know the people you don't always work with every day. Because there might be an emergency situation or a really short timeline where you need to accomplish something and you need those relationships already established and know who you can trust and that they can trust you.
Absolutely. And that ties into my next question. We know that there is no manual to business, right? There's nothing that says, hey, you got to do this, this, and this, and you'll get here, right? So as someone who's been a part of a company that was founded, that was in the startup phase, what do you believe are the most crucial stages for a company to launch from that Series A stage to that Series B and beyond?
First, you really need to make sure that if there was a company mission that was established when you first took something from idea to first five employees, that that mission is still paramount, that you wouldn't change a thing about it. Because as long as you have some sort of North Star to march to, that helps you stay focused. I think the riskiest point in a company's life is the week after the Series A closes and gets announced to the world. Because then a bunch of people and companies that might not have noticed you before now notice you. And that's not just potential clients, that's potential competitors, that's investors, that's partners, that's a new pool of people to hire. And it's a bunch of vendors that want to sell to you now that you're an established company. So a lot more noise gets created once you've raised the A, and you don't yet have enough traction, I think, in the market to force your ideology, your terms, your process on a bunch of others. So that, to me, I think that's the riskiest time. So really being honest about what you're good at as a company and what you'd like to be good at but aren't yet good at today. And then thirdly, what you're not good at, but that's okay because you don't want to be good at it. You get a lot of shiny balls and opportunities. I was talking earlier about the ICP. There's been no shortage during my time at Cherry where there's been some opportunities that look fantastic initially. It'd be millions of dollars in revenue. And you spend just 30 minutes digging under the hood. It's like, well, it's going to cost us twice that much just to get the money in the door.
Well, I'm going to do that digging first before you...
Yeah, or it's going to lead to 9 months of procurement and we need partners on, like, I'll give one example. Working with the government, we had a few partners bring us potential opportunities with various government agencies. And luckily, we had a couple people that are senior in our organization that have gone down this path before and said, that department, it's going to take 9 months if you do everything right. So unless we start right now and we're highly confident we're going to get across the finish line in 9 months, we shouldn't do this because the election is next year. And if we don't get it done, then we're swallowed up in turmoil around the election and then maybe changing of the guard at various departments. And then you got to start all over. Unless we are like, someone's willing to put their bonus on the line and commit to it, we're not touching that. Let's focus on what we know, what we're good at. And then when we're more established and we're bigger and we have a little bit more leeway, maybe those groups are coming to us and more actively engaging. And then it's time to do that.
Yeah. And one of the things I hear you consistently say is having, you know, diverse thinking in the room, right? Making these decisions. So how do you recommend an organization go about ensuring they have that diverse perspective in the room?
So first, it's about agreeing on what you think of as diversity at a company. Mm-hmm. So it could be diversity in age, could be diversity in gender, diversity in race, diversity in industry experience, diversity in skill set. You kind of want all of it. I think of it as you want the rainbow when you look at people and you want the rainbow when you hear about what people have done in their life. Like without that wide and diverse of an opinion view, you'll get siloed really fast. So it's just as important to hire people that have had some great success and experience doing the thing that you want to do, right? Maybe it's go public or have a liquidity event or get a big partnership or work with a particular part of the industry. But you also want some people that have failed, right? And have some really, really good lessons learned by failing and have bounced back from that failure in a meaningful way. Now, you don't want people that have like, you know, they're like under investigation by the SEC and they're failing like, you know, present for 6 months. There's failure and there's failure, right? Let me caveat that. But it shouldn't be a black mark on somebody's resume that their company ran out of money or they were only in their job for 9 months. I mean, maybe there wasn't a culture fit. Maybe they learned something or they don't have to go to a particular university to be of value or even college itself. Like maybe they were just, they're scrappy and started working at age 16 and they have massive amounts of value and lessons to bring to the company. So I guess when I say diverse, I mean, be open-minded about someone's background and look more toward work ethic and culture fit than anything else. There are people that would look like not great on paper that might end up being the best employees or maybe even co-founders in an organization, and some people that look like they're going to be absolute rock stars on paper. And maybe because of that, you didn't do as much vetting as you should have. And then 3 months in, there's a lot of regret around having that person in the organization because either they're not helpful or maybe even worse, they're toxic.
Absolutely. We've all seen it. So that was beautifully said, man, the description of diversity and what it brings in the different standpoints. So I love how you put that. Let's talk business strategy. I know you like talking business strategy, right? So so how does founders who are in that growth phase early on, how do they establish a clear business strategy and communicate it effectively?
I think there's three things there. One, you need a really, really solid board of advisors. And I don't necessarily mean actual board members, like people who are making you report to them every month how you're doing, but just people that are loosely connected to the company, that are well established in their career and they're in the industry you care about, that are for some reason passionate about your company, that will give you advice, right? That's number one, because there you need to be able to crowdsource good experience and good opinion. And when you're at the early stage, you just don't have the money to do it. So find people that are willing to do that either for contingent equity or for free, just because they care and you have a good relationship. That's number one. Number two, have some very, very honest and early conversations from companies that you want to be your clients. Go to them and say, look, I'm early. I have this idea. You know, it's going to be 6 months until I've really got something to try to sell on you. In that 6 months, what should we be working on? What should we be prioritizing? What would you want to see? And are you willing to let me show you early versions of that? Whether that's a software product, whether that's a hardware product, whether that's a consumer good, whether that's a consulting service, anything, right? Go test the idea with people who you want to actually give you money because they will be most honest with their feedback. And then lastly, when you're hiring the first five people at the company, those are the most important five hires you make, because you're going to be in a crucible together. You're going to be spending a lot of nights and weekends together. You probably spend more time with them than you do your family, at least initially. So there needs to be like a real strong bond with those hires. So don't rush in hiring those first five people. Really make sure there's something there. Don't take shortcuts.
Yeah, I love that, man. And you mentioned something about going to the companies you want to be your clients. So what does that look like? How do you go about going to them and saying, hey, I got something for you, but it's not ready?
It depends how experienced you are in the industry and what relationships you already have. Obviously, personally, a lot more fortunate because I spent many tours of duty at large companies and built a network before I really ever had to do that as a small enterprise. But for those who are a lot younger and you're starting out your career, you'd be surprised how much executives at clients appreciate someone who's youthful just reaching out and being honest and saying, hey, I got this idea. It's not fully baked. I'm not expecting you to give me any money, and I know your time is really valuable. I would just love your advice. That message is so different from what they're used to hearing every day. They're getting pounded via text message, via email, via automated marketing campaign, and it's all the same generic sounding stuff because it's all driven partially by AI now. They're like, oh my God, I'm building rules, so I don't have to hear this noise coming in trying to sell me something. Someone reaches out and says, hey, full honesty, I've got this idea. I'm trying to get feedback from the market. If you've got 15 minutes, anytime in the next month, pick a slot. I will make my calendar accommodate you. You'd be surprised the level of engagement you'd get from these people. And they'll book you for 15 minutes. And if they're intrigued, you'll be on the phone for an hour. You'll get a bunch of feedback.
I absolutely love that, because there's this unspoken thing about what it takes, where you're establishing these networks, establishing these partnerships. And even if they say, nah, not right now, one, they now know who you are. They're aware of you. So if you reach back out and say, hey, what about now? They understand that you're not there just doing some fluff and you're honest. You know, that goes a long way. But how do you get on the phone with those people? Because there's so many gatekeepers these days. So what do you do to get on that line?
So the technology is changing so much these days. So I don't know all these great tools that are out there to get accurate contact information like Zoom Info or Lasha or whatever you. But my method, if I'm not directly connected to somebody, has always been to go on LinkedIn and see who we're both mutually connected to and ask those people if they're willing to make an introduction. And if they waffle or they say no, that means they don't quite have the relationship with that person that you might expect them being connected on LinkedIn. And but if they're willing to make an intro, you make it easy for them. You provide that third party with all the context they would need. Why you want that person's time, what the purpose is, what the purpose is not, what the ask is, what the ask is not. So that you make it easy for that person to make the intro on your behalf. There's this, like, there's been a bunch of studies about where venture capital has flowed and not flowed to, especially a bunch of like underserved, you know, communities who are working their tails off. The reason for that is typically because those people who are writing checks, they're getting so much inbound, they don't even look at it. They say, look, I'm being flooded. I don't have time. So I will pay attention when there's a warm intro from someone that I trust to make time. So I will make time. So you want to create that environment where you can give that person the comfort to make a little bit of time for you.
Absolutely. And I love that. And then I love that you mentioned LinkedIn, because so many people are afraid, you just said, like, shoot that message and make it so it's personalized. You're not just sending the same thing to everyone. Like, find something that, hey, I really love the work you did on X. I just read this article from you, and whatever it is, make sure you took the time, because you're using their time. So you want to show that you also did your due diligence and that you're not just blowing smoke or just saying something that you say to everyone. I think that's
You won't always have the luxury of playing the long game, especially when you're in a startup. But I've definitely had a lot of people that I've like known that are friends of friends. They're acquaintances. I've seen them at conferences, whatever, what have you. And every so often, an article would, maybe they raised some money, maybe they did an acquisition, maybe they were interviewed somewhere. And I'll always send a note and just say, saw this, looks like you're doing great, hope you're well, right? No ask for their time, nothing, just here's a note, right? And after a while, all of a sudden, I'm getting inbound from those people. Hey, it's time we catch up properly. I've seen what you were doing. You've been so friendly to me. Let's do a proper catch up. You can't really plan for that, but if you keep all that relationship building open, it really does unlock a lot of opportunity. And I know that's not as easy to do for people who are introverts. So there's technology that will help you craft messaging. Like Jasper is a great tool. It's an AI tool that helps you craft messaging. You type in what you're thinking about saying and it will help you clean it up. Use tools like that to help you be more focused. And don't be afraid to reach out to people just to say hi or congrats or hope you're doing well without any thought of an ask, because that'll help you long term.
Absolutely. Start where you are and come from service and just show that, hey, I just wanted to say hello. What you said, Kevin, I do that all the time. I'm here in Houston in the Houston Business Journal. You know, I go in there, they say that the people to watch and, you know, top person doing this. I'll reach out to them and say, hey, congratulations on being named, you know, and that's it. Nothing else. You know, they're like, hey, well, thanks for that, you know. And that shows like they're like, oh man, I like being noticed. Like I like that someone just didn't want anything from me. They just said hello. So I love that technique and tactic. That's the easiest one I've heard so far. So I'll take it.
Good.
So we're gonna shift to our by design segment where I ask every guest the same three questions. You ready, Kevin?
I'm ready.
All right. What has been the hardest part about designing a life and business you don't need a vacation?
Avoiding comparison with other people that I've known for a long time. We're always saying, oh, what is that person doing? And we went to high school together and why am I not at that level that they're at? Or, oh, I just saw this person's social media profile. They took this trip that I've always wanted to go on, but haven't been able to. That like comparison, it's not really that healthy. It really slows you down. And I'm much better about it now than I was a few years ago. But I would say that's the biggest weakness, is always worrying about how others are doing or comparing myself to a certain trajectory that I'm supposed to live by, when that none of that matters.
Yeah, that is so true, especially now. I mean, we see it all the time with social media, just inundated with that, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for that transparency too. Number two is, what is the best lesson you've learned from your professional journey?
Okay. Talk to and listen to your customers a lot more than you are now. Ask for their advice. Ask for their feedback. Try to treat only every fourth or fifth conversation as a sales conversation, right? When they want to buy stuff from you, they will. My best relationships in this business are for folks that are now, they're not just clients, they're legitimate friends, because we talk so much and it's not always about my company or theirs or the industry or what have you. Spend a lot of time doing that. That helps in two ways. One, it will help you grow your business because you build a bigger network of people that trust you. And number two, it lowers the stress level. Because if you're in back-to-back meetings all the time and you're like trying to push and push and push, it gets pretty hard to sustain, especially for like someone like me that's got three kids at home now. You need a couple meetings during the day where it's a little more casual, it's a little more comfortable, there's not a lot of expectations.
Right.
You just build that in. Like it really helps the ebb and flow of the week.
And I love that. I remember I was having a call with someone and I said, hey, I don't come to this call with any expectations. And they said, what? Like, you need to expect. And I said, I don't expect you to be my client or buy from me. I don't expect anything. I'm open, right? I'm open to what may come, because you may not be my client, but you may be my friend, right? You may be that someone else, right?
But if you say that, you better mean it.
Absolutely. Right?
Like, don't get on a call and be like, hey, just no agenda, no expectations today.
And then
like 4 minutes later, you're giving the hard sell. That won't go well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Be authentic. Be real about it. So. I love that. Yeah, absolutely. You got to be real. The third question, what are three tools or tips, I know you're getting a lot already, that you would recommend when scaling a business?
Number one, find software tools that can basically help you replicate parts of yourself that are free. Early on in the early days, you just don't have a lot of capital to work with. So like either using like the Microsoft Office Suite free trial or the Google Suite. Use it, leveraging a bunch of the AI tools that are out there that'll, you know, help you either clean up emails or run automated marketing. Take advantage of LinkedIn. I know we've already talked about it, but early on really don't need any of the premium features that they offer, just being present in the market. And if you have a more direct to consumer type business, being on other social media channels like Instagram or TikTok, spend time on there. I'm not a huge fan of social media in general because I don't sell to consumers and I don't want to hear all the distractions, but it does work for a bunch of people. And then I guess the last tip is be highly communicative with those that you would trust that could give you advice and seek it. Crowdsource the right wisdom with your business, because oftentimes that advice is free. And if you went to one of our former consulting firms like Deloitte, that advice is pretty expensive.
Absolutely. It is expensive. Well, thank you, man. It's been a pleasure and an honor. I know you want to get some sleep, so I will wrap it up with you. But before we go, how can the people connect with you?
Yeah, you reach out to me either on LinkedIn or on Twitter. The name is Kevin Stoffman. Just search for that name. You'll find me. And then our website for the company is cherry.com, C-H-E-R-R-E. And happy to chat with you if you're in or aspiring to be in the real estate business.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for your time and all the value you have added. I appreciate you. And congratulations once again on a new baby girl. And peace and blessings to your family, man. Remember, audience, keep ascending.
Thanks. Have me on.
Design Your Life and Business, the podcast for leaders, is brought to you by Bright Mind Consulting Group. To find out more about Bright Mind Consulting Group and how you can become the best leader possible, visit brightmindconsultinggroup.com. Make sure you search for Design Your Life and Business on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Bright Mind Consulting Group, we cannot thank you enough for listening.